Clayton. John Clayton.
Hey, Mom! I'm done with my segment!
This is the Coors Light Cold Hard Facts with John Clayton.
Brought to you by Coors Light. Made to chill.
We're talking football with the professor, John Clayton, as we do every day at this time with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. If you guys have questions for John, you can text him in, 421-3776. That's 421-ESPN. We'll try to get to some of your questions before we let him go for the day. Hello, John.
Hi, guys.
Boy, good news here. I don't know if you saw this, but Antonio Brown said there's nothing wrong with my mental health, which if that's true, then I guess means he's just a jerk.
Yeah. Well, yeah. There's something wrong with his mental health, and he's a jerk. Simple. I mean, simple as that. It's like, and I love the fact that in that story, there's at least four or five references to mental people that he went to, and mental treatment that he had, and yet he has no mental problems. I mean, give me a break.
Yeah, apparently they all. Totally normal. You're
sane. It's like if you read the whole story, you saw how many references. Okay, well, after New England, he had to get some mental help, and after this and after that, and it's like, oh no, I'm fine. And so now, what's he doing? He's playing music, making doing albums, and it's like, good God, it's like, oh, you have no mental health problems, yet. You don't pay the people that work for you. You beat up some of the people that work for you. You assault women. It's like, oh, no, he's in good shape.
Yeah, so all those people gave him a clean bill of health.
Oh, absolutely, no doubt. Yeah. I mean, Bruce Arians, totally endorsed him. I tell you, the guy that's just amazing in this whole story is Mike Tomlin. And how Mike Tomlin was able to hide the fact that this guy was such a mental jerk that he hid it for so many years.
Yeah. And he dealt with Le'Veon Bell at the same time.
I agree.
Who was not on the same level as Antonio Brown by any stretch, but seemed to be a bit of a malcontent.
Well, malcontent, stupid business person. And, of course, I mean, didn't he get busted a couple times for drugs? Marijuana.
Did he? Yeah, probably.
I remember he was in the car the one time when they caught him, and so he got in trouble for that. So it's like, yeah. So, yeah, I give Mike Tomlin a lot of credit.
Man. I mean, yeah, more tolerant than we thought. Mm-hmm, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. What was the worst thing Antonio Brown did in Pittsburgh? Or at least that we heard of? Because I'm assuming Tomlin put the lid on a lot of that
stuff. We don't know.
Remember he filmed a post-game speech and put it out on Instagram or something
that. Yeah, he filmed a post-game speech with Tomlin. That didn't go over well.
There was a time where I know the Pittsburgh was out on the field for warm-ups, and it shows him on the sidelines in his clothes, his street clothes still. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So,
yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, because, I mean, and then he quit on the team at one point. It's like, this guy is just amazing. How he gets back in the league, I have no idea.
Yeah.
He doesn't. That's what happens.
Let's hope not.
We've seen the last of him.
Well, and especially since Brady and Arians seem to cater to him and give him pretty much everything he needed. And, you got people trying to help you. And I think he said something about Brady where, he's just friends with me because I'm a good football player.
Well, no, he said he was a phony friend.
Yeah. So, I mean, like,
he's a phony friend who let him, as a nutcase, live in the house with the kids and the wife.
As a nutcase, even.
Yeah, so it's like, I mean, he lets, and so it's like, oh, a phony friend, it's like, is any phony friend going to allow you to live in Derek Jeter's mansion?
Well, and the thing is, too, it just makes Brady look better, because he's not said anything about it.
No,
right?
No.
I mean, he hasn't commented, and it's like, well, there you go, I mean. If Antonio Brown's saying bad things about you, then maybe it's a good thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's John, what you get for going out on a limb for the guy, right?
Yeah, and of course, then he goes on social media and was doing negative Bruce Arians things, and that was really nice.
Yeah. Well, any other – what's the big story today? What have you been working on, John? I know you write every week, but what's going on?
Well,
the two
things are, number one, looks like the Giants are close to hiring a general manager. It appears to be Adam Peters, who's 42 years old, the assistant general manager of the San Francisco 49ers. I mean, they're down to three interviews, but it looks like he's going to be the one. Then, of course, Denver is, speeding up their process for getting their 10 interviews done. It'll be done Sunday night. And so I would imagine that they'll make an offer to Dan Quinn on Monday morning and see where Dan stands, because, Dan, has interviewed, since interviewing in Denver, interviewed with four other teams. Three of those teams haven't officially hired their GM yet, so they're not ready to do anything. So right now, Denver has the best chance to get something done. Then, of course, just waiting to see, what's going on with the Raiders and if indeed they're going to hire Jim Harbaugh.
Hey, John, what do you know about Joe Witt Jr., the latest name to emerge in the Seahawks search for a defensive coordinator?
Yeah, not much. I mean, because, again, I don't know much of him, didn't hear much of him before the season. All I know is that his resume for this year was phenomenal. I mean, what he was able to do with the secondary, which isn't a real great secondary, but the fact that they had all the interceptions, the turnovers, the big plays, all that different stuff. And, you have to attribute a lot of that to him and Dan Quinn. But again, I mean, he had a great season. So I can see why he's in the mix. But what's kind of interesting about that, except for, say, Gus Bradley, who we're waiting to find out is going to be available. I mean, what you're looking at is that there has not, all the other guys have Chicago ties to them. And they've all worked with each other in Chicago. So that I find that really fascinating. But I don't know. Where do you stand, Dave? Because I'm not opposed to Clint Hurt getting the job, but boy, I'm a big Ed Donatell guy.
Yeah, I'm kind of leaning that way too. Because even though, and Bob talked about fresh eyes,
and
which I like that concept, but there's nothing saying that Ed Donatell might be able to do that. Come in and say, hey, you got to do this, you got to do that. So, I mean, I don't think him and Peter are that tight.
Remember, it's like they were together in 83 at the University of Pacific, and then, he hired him with the New York Jets.
With the Jets,
yeah.
And that was a while ago. So, I mean, there is some connection there. I feel like he's kind of in between because Clint Hurt is the guy in the building.
Yeah.
And then Desai is the guy that, is pretty far off. And then the thing I wanted to ask you, John, with Joe Witt, now are they – because he's been a passing game coordinator for 4 years in a row.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's kind of interesting. It goes Green Bay, Cleveland, Atlanta, Dallas. And you're right. I mean, this year they were number one in the league in takeaways.
Yeah.
With 34. But is there a chance that Pete's not interviewing him necessarily for the D coordinator job, but the passing game coordinator job? Because Andre Curtis got fired. So
yeah, could be. Yeah.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
This would be – as far as passing game coordinator goes, where that ranks, I mean, this would probably be even a bigger stretch, if you will, than Clint Hurt. Because Clint Hurt's never been a defensive coordinator, but he's been an assistant head coach for a long time, and he's been a D-line coach, whereas this guy's been the passing game coordinator. So I feel like it'd probably be a bigger stretch.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, but I think it's interesting that they could definitely take a look at him and see where it goes. But I think they've assembled a reasonably good list so far, and we'll see if it grows and how fast they're going to do in hiring.
Yeah.
Hey, John, we played a cut from Albert Breer to open the show, he basically said he thinks this is the last contract that Russell signs with the Seahawks.
Oh, jeez.
We'll see if it's true. But, I mean, just John, I know how you hate hypotheticals, but just play along with me here.
No.
You can answer this because you'll have an opinion on this. Let's just pretend that's true.
Yeah.
There 2 years left on the deal, and then he's done. If you're Pete and John, how do you approach that? Do you say, okay, 2 years, we got Russell, we're going for it, we're going to surround him with the best talent possibly assemble, or do you go, we're gonna get as much as we can in return right now because he's as young as he's
They're not trading him.
It's a hypothetical, John.
Well, it's a dumb hypothetical. It's dumb. I mean, again, I'm sorry, but again, he's not being traded. I mean, again.
Why do you hate Albert Breer? What happened?
No, I like Albert Breer. No, I like him a lot. I mean, again, he's not saying that they're going to trade him. He's just saying that he may not re-sign. It's like, okay, that's 2 years from now. I mean, let's worry about next year and the year after that. But again, I mean, Albert's great.
But, you know, and the thing that I guess I found kind of silly about it is that, well, what if they go to the NFC Championship game next year? Or what if they win the second round of the of the playoffs? I mean, I maybe people will get frustrated if they're one and done, but still, I mean, you know, you don't know. You're saying that 2 years in the future, not having any idea how the next two seasons are going
to go. I mean, it's like the same thing with like Aaron Rodgers. I mean, Aaron Rodgers did not want to come back to the Green Bay Packers this year. He came back. They're the number one seed. He's the MVP. And if they go to a Super Bowl, he very well may come back for another year. He may not want to be traded. And so it's like, you know, you can't keep. I mean, everybody wants to speculate about this move and get the click bites and everything else. And it's like the reporting nationwide right now is so, so bad.
Yeah. One from the listeners. Yeah. It's Professor, who would you say is the Seahawks comeback player of the year? Daryl Taylor, Rashad Penny, or Al Woods?
I would say, Rashad Penny. It has to be Daryl Taylor, because I mean, Daryl Taylor didn't play the year before. He did a lot of good things this past year. You know, Rashad Penny would be in the number two hole because he came back and had a great finish to the season. And then Al Woods would be number three.
Yeah, well, you know, now I answered the question, you know, who's the most underrated player this year? I thought it was Al Woods, but you know, as far as comeback player, he was out because of COVID. He opted out, right?
Well, no, he didn't have COVID, but
No. The year before, in 2020, he opted out because of COVID.
Yeah, for fear of COVID, yeah.
So, which is, you know, I guess the reason I discount it for comeback players is just because the other guys were injured.
Yeah.
You know, so, yeah.
And again, it's like there was like 60 players that did it that year. 60 players opted out. So it's not like Al Woods was like one of the rare ones, but you know, a lot of those guys were offensive linemen and defensive linemen, the big guys, because the big guys worried about their respiratory and everything else, and you can understand that. And so you know, there was a lot of players that just opted out, 64-65.
Yeah, I want to say that I looked at the list of guys that opted out, and there was a vast majority were the big fellows.
Yes.
Which makes sense.
No question about it.
John, I see the NFL filed a motion asking a Nevada court to dismiss John Gruden's lawsuit against the league, which I'm assuming this is just procedural. This is just what you're supposed to do, is just saying, you know, the leaked emails are baseless and should be dismissed for failure to state a single viable cause of action. How do you think this ends up? Do you think I feel like there's going to be a settlement.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah. I mean, I think it's inevitable that they either take it to arbitration, that they reach some kind of a settlement. But I think you could see it going in that direction. Because I know talking to John Gruden's side, they feel there's enough things that can come out. And there are that could hurt the National Football League. You know, like, for example, the relationship with the league's attorney, you know, best attorney who's involved in the labor negotiations, and how he's favored Washington on so many different things through the last several years. You know, that obviously did not look good. And then there's some other things that are involved too. So, you know, like, I mean, you can see, and one of the things that the league does is that, you know, in situations, particularly like you saw it in St. Louis and other, you know, like is a move and things of that nature. You saw it in New Orleans. You know, it's like when it gets to the point where they have to leak out information comes out in the courtroom that they don't like, they'll settle. Like in the case of St. Louis, you know, they were going to have to put the financial records of the, you know, certainly the Rams and maybe a lot of the NFL teams. In New Orleans, you know, in that lawsuit involving the Benson family, you know, they were going to have to put out the financials, and they don't like that. So, no, I think this will end up in a settlement.
Hey, John, quickly, who lands in the league first, if either one of them? John Gruden or Antonio Brown?
John Gruden, I think. Although it's going to take both a hard time to do that. I don't think Antonio Brown's going to ever be back.
Yeah, if Brown were 25, I would say somebody will. But he's going to be 34. He's done. But but what about Gruden? Is there a shot anywhere down the road you think he's back in some form?
Debatable. I mean, again, it's like he hurt himself a lot because, again, you know, when you make as many, you know, racial type comments and you make as many comments about women and things like that, it's going to be hard to come back.
Yeah. Hey, John, injuries. I saw no designation for Jimmy Garoppolo. Nick Bosa is back or good to go. And then Fred Warner, no designation there. And I feel like if Garoppolo doesn't play, it might help the team.
Yeah. But, yeah, because, again, I mean, how effective can he be, you know, with a sore shoulder, you know, a bad finger, a bad thumb, right thumb, and then on top of it, you know, it's a night game and it's going to be zero wind chill.
Wow.
So how effective can he be? And again, you saw him last week. He wasn't that effective. I know he won. He beat the Dallas Cowboys, but was he totally effective? I think no.
According to some of my old teammates, it's actually called the windshield factor, John. It was a common mistake. The windshield factor.
Oh.
It's windshield.
Yeah. Yeah. It's sort of a hybrid statement.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Listen, I'm just going on the regular weather forecast.
Got it right, John.
Yeah.
And then on the other side, Bakhtiari, questionable. And he was out of the – wasn't he out of the NFC Championship game last year?
Mm-hmm.
I think Bakhtiari.
Yeah, he
anyway,
blew out his ACL, yeah.
Yeah, so him and Marquez Valdes-Scantling is doubtful. On the other side, but other than that, they're pretty healthy. Seems.
And again, I mean, kind of interesting that there's very few COVIDs this week, so that's encouraging.
Yeah.
John, did you see the shot Michael Irvin took at the Cowboys?
I didn't see it. I know he took one, but I didn't see it.
Yeah, he basically laid out this, and it's hard to argue with him. He just said you can't win in this game if your stars don't show up and play. It's Dak Prescott, 69 passer rating, Ezekiel Elliott, 31 rushing yards, and CeeDee Lamb, 21 yards on one reception. They had their stars playing like role players. That's why they got their butts sitting at home.
Good comments.
And he's again, not wrong.
That's what you like about Michael, because obviously. I mean, he's the biggest Cowboys supporter you can ask for, but he's not afraid to rip them when things don't go right. And, I mean, he's ripping them, and you can see a lot of that's pointed to Mike McCarthy, who's going to keep his job as the head coach, but you know he's going to be in trouble for next year.
Hey, John, football changes for rules next year. First of all, I wanted to ask you, we were just talking about baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And where are you with some of the changes? Like, they're talking about anti-shift, no shifting, and you know, the guy starting on second base and extra innings. I know you were, you know, kind of watching the Mariners a little bit.
Yeah.
How do you feel about the changes for baseball?
I'm not opposed to having the anti-shift in there, because you know, it's like it's led to one of the lowest hitting years in baseball history. And again, it's like you know, Bob doesn't go back this far, but I think you and I do. I mean, that goes back to like 1969, you know, when Bob Gibson had that 1.12 earned run average, and you had Sandy Koufax and Don Drysdale and all the pitchers holding things down. But again, you know, when batting averages go down to like, you know, 234, I mean, something needs to be done, and a lot of it's because of the shifting. And so with the shifting, you know, it just takes away, you know, some of the guys that, you know, try to move the ball. So I'm with the shifting, I mean, the extra inning thing that I was back and forth on, you know, the fact that you put the guy at second base and all that stuff, I was against that at first. Now I'm okay with it. So it's like they can keep that up. But I'm definitely for the idea of having designated hitters in both leagues. Because, again, you know, why should either league be different? You know, why should – I was like, do you really want to see a pitcher bat? I don't. Yeah. And so it's like – you know,
Ohtani, but that's about it.
Yeah, yeah. Agreed.
Yeah. Well, for the record, in 1969, I was 5, John, so I don't think we were friends in kindergarten. But
yeah.
but no, so what? The reason why I was kind of leading you into that, what about as far as, and we'll know as the off season goes along, but are you hearing about any major changes in the NFL as far as rules and kickoffs and things like that?
Yeah, way too early, because, again, what ends up happening is that once you get through the season, and they haven't gotten through the full season yet because, you know, they're in the playoffs right now, is that, you know, they'll then start to solicit opinions from the coaches and then take them to, you know, the combine in Indianapolis and start discussing them. And so that hasn't even started yet. And the combine right now is tentatively scheduled for March 1st to March 7th. And we don't know if it's going to be virtual, if people are going to be there, or what's going to happen. So it's like, but that usually happens at the combine.
Yeah.
John, the 509 asking, John, do you think Josh McCown would be a good head coach for the Texans? Just heard he was interviewed for the job.
There today? Yeah, I mean, I don't know if he would because he's never done it before, but I know that he's been on their radar now for 2 years, and he almost got the job last year. And it's like, you know, I like Josh. I feel bad for him if he takes the job because it's such a bad job. But again, he's been in the mix, and he very well could take it. Because what I'm hearing is that, you know, they really want to get Brian Flores, but I don't think Flores is all that interested in going to the Texans.
Hey, John, just looking through my notes from yesterday. We're talking about Gerald Everett.
Yeah.
You know, and he missed three games. But, you know, and we did overachieve, underachieve. But, you know, the first seven games, he had 25 targets. And then the last seven, he had 38. So they kind of caught on with him. But were you surprised by the kind of – I know you're never surprised. But, you know, with Gerald Everett, I was, because I thought he was good in L.A. But I feel like he can be a superstar. What do you think about
Gerald? I don't know about superstar, but he's a really good player. And I think that, you know, because again, I mean, you can see that he had the talent. I mean, he's got the, you know, his former tight end coach who's the offensive coordinator. That works in his favor. And I think you can see he can do a lot of good things. So I like him a lot.
Yeah.
Now the question is going to be, you know, what's he going to cost to re-sign?
All right.
John, we appreciate it. We'll talk tomorrow.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks.
There you go. If you missed any of today's cold, hard facts brought to you by Coors Light, made to chill, download the podcast at 710sports.com. It's the last time I'll try to get him to play along in a hypothetical. He just won't do it. Not even his buddy Albert Breer. He just can't play the hypothetical game.
Yeah, I know. Well, I think he's getting outraged. And really, you know, when you look at it, like I said, I mean, you're talking about something. We have no idea what's going to happen 2 years from now. Nah. I mean, Russ could go out and have two seasons in a row that were like the beginning part of the 2020 season.
Yeah.
You know, and they could go and, you know, like I said, deep into the playoffs, whatever. Why would you make that prediction now?
I don't, to get click bites.
Yeah. Is that what John calls them? Click bites. Yeah.
Click bites. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. If it's all about the ball on defense, how can the Seahawks fix their issues forcing turnovers? We'll get into that next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob, brought to you by Angel of the Winds Casino Resort on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Our thanks to the Professor John Clayton for joining us in the previous segment. If you guys missed any of that, you can head to the podcast page at 710sports.com. After the show, click on the podcast tab, click on our picture, and you'll find that conversation right there waiting for you. Or you can search Wyman and Bob on anywhere you get your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever, and click subscribe. That way you never have to think about it again. Happens once, and it just downloads automatically for you each and every day. Coming up at 5 o'clock, John Morosi will join us, our NHL insider, so stay tuned for that conversation. We do have to ask him, though, about those goofy extra inning rules they were running in the Atlantic League with the extra innings with runners on first and second, and then after the 10th, bases loaded. Got to get his take on that as a baseball mind, of which he is. But meanwhile, we were talking about, as far as the defense of the Seahawks go, and it's all about the ball on defense. What do they do? How do you force more turnovers? Is it about the way you cover or guard, Dave? Seahawks had 18 turnovers last year, the fewest ever in a Seahawks season. I didn't realize that. Ever in the history of the organization? Huh?
18 turnovers?
Yeah. How do you get back to forcing turnovers?
Yeah, well, first of all, you focus on it, which they do. But the other thing I would say is sacks. Because they only got 34, and that's, you know, the strip sack. You need to re-sign Cliff Avril, right?
What was it last year? Was it 48? It was like 28 and then, or 46?
47, I think.
47, because it was 28 the year before. I remember you and I just talking about it, going, man, that's putrid. You can't do that. And then they rebounded with 46, 47, whatever it was, and now they drop back down again. And they only force just 18 turnovers.
Right. Yeah, it was 46. I'm sorry. And so they were, what, seventh in the league as far as sacks go.
Last year.
And then, what's that?
Last season.
No, I'm talking about in 2020.
Yeah, sorry. We're still in the season technically, so I'm referring to last season.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, in the 2020 season, they were seventh with 46 sacks. But yeah, and they were bottom of the bottom third this year with 34. And look, a lot of that had to do with their front. I mean, I don't think they went, well, we're going to do this to stop the run and, you know, cover up our linebackers, and it'll probably result in less sacks. They probably didn't say that, but that's how it worked out. And, you know, 34, I mean, it's not that far away from where they were in 2019. It's only six more sacks than when they were second worst in the league. So, by the way, the Falcons got 18 sacks this year.
Oh, my goodness.
They were dead last. But, you know, the team that's always at the top is Pittsburgh, and they had 55. So, yeah. And you can look at their personnel. They have such good defensive linemen there. That Tuitt guy, who's the guy who I always confuse his name with the guy with the New Orleans Saints. Everybody was, like, giving me a hard time about it. Of course, you got T.J. Watt.
Yeah.
You know, they lost the other linebacker. I think he went to Tennessee. That's one thing for sure. The other thing is that, you know, I mean, how many times did they have there were interceptions to be had that they didn't get? You know, just working on your ball skills.
Is there something you guys would focus on as a defense to four? Was it, hey, go after the ball, punch the ball, something? I mean, because turnovers happen. I mean, yeah, maybe it's courtesy of a hard hit, or you jump around, you jump in front of a guy, you pick it off. But you're looking at it saying, okay, the Seahawks recorded just 18 turnovers, fewest ever. So how do you increase it? It feels like some of it's just luck. It's you're waiting for the other guy to make a mistake. How do you force that turnover? Do you focus on punching the ball, going Peanut Tillman, and hey, every – yeah, wrap the guy up, but we need you to punch at that ball more often. That becomes more of a focus.
Yeah, absolutely. You work on it. We even worked on it. I mean, I remember that there was a drill we'd do, you know, at least once a week where you'd either try to punch it from underneath or, you know, what they call tomahawk it from, you know, over
chop
the top.
Down on it.
Yeah, and, you know, and that's something that, like, Lawrence Taylor, I always see, you know, if I close my eyes, I see him just hacking away at that, you know, at that, the quarterback's arm. So there's that. And then some people just have a knack for it. The Tillman thing, you mentioned Peanut Tillman. Darius Leonard, the guy with the Colts.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. He must have had 8 or 9. I'm not exaggerating. I might be off by 1, 8 or 9 punch outs. And some of them were just unbelievable. So just having a knack for it. And you saw the Seahawks, you know, try to do that, but it's tough. The other thing it results in is that it results in missed tackles a lot of times.
Yeah.
Where guys will, like, you got to get the guy down on the ground first and foremost.
When you'll see him repeatedly swiping at it as the ball carrier is running, right? Yeah. So he's kind of got one hand on the ball carrier, keeps hitting at the ball, and the guy's got it at that point, knows what's going on and has it. Tucked away pretty. I rarely see that work where it's like, hey, on the third attempt, I finally punched it loose. You know, it's usually when the guy doesn't realize somebody's coming up from behind him or the initial hit will jar the ball. But once you swatted at it once, twice, you're probably not getting the ball. You should probably just wrap him up and bring him to the ground rather than run with him down the field, holding on to him, trying to punch the ball out.
Yeah, exactly. Here's another thing that can help, Bob. You'll like this one. Don't drop defensive linemen into coverage.
Yeah, that's a good one. We can start there. Let's start there.
Yeah, now,
Well, I was going to say the other part of looking at the defense, and Adam Jude wrote about this in the Seattle Times, and we touched on this briefly, but he said, quote, Carroll preferred cover two because his priority was to limit explosive plays, but he does plan to be more attack-minded going forward. And we touched on that earlier, but what does that mean to you when you hear that? We're going to change. We're going to be more attack-minded.
Yeah, I don't know why cover two. I mean, basic in the most basic form, you're rushing four. You're dropping seven. Five of those guys are in underneath the zones and only two deep. So, you know, it's vulnerable to deep seam routes. So, and then, you know, you look at because cover three and quarters. I mean, those are meant to be – we're going to keep everything in front of us. We're going to divide the field, the deep field, into thirds rather than halves. And it's tough when you have two safeties in the deep part and they got to cover an entire half. You know, that's harder than cover three. So I'm not sure how people are talking about it or describing it. And then maybe they're thinking about different things. But yeah, that to me didn't really make sense. But I just think, you know, knowing, first of all, the turnover as far as corners go, I mean, you really had how many different corners playing this year? What, six, seven?
Yeah, DJ Reed, Trey Flowers, Bless Austin, Sidney Jones, Trey Brown, Akella Witherspoon. Well, I guess he didn't really play for you.
No, he was out.
Who am I missing?
John Reed.
John Reed, yep.
Yeah.
You had a whole bunch, Dave.
yeah. There was a real inconsistency there. And, you know, you kind of work on that and you get your confidence going. And DJ Reed, I mean, he was talking to us about how they didn't target him, you know, and that was something that used to happen to Richard Sherman all the time. But, yeah, I mean, there's that. And just, you know, a lot of times you just get lucky. I would say 20 to 30% of takeaways are luck, like the ball bouncing in the right way. Like, remember there's a pick six that Russ had in 2019. Can't remember if it was the Saints or Baltimore, but I mean, the ball could have bounced anywhere and it went right into the guy's hands and marches into the end zone. So there is some luck involved, but that's something that Pete has prided himself on. And in a season where they didn't get a lot of takeaways, you know, they did a good job of taking care of the ball. And if you go and look at the, you know, there's two sides to the turnover ratio, which is incredibly important. Because think about it. You're not only taking away a possession from a team, you're adding one to your side. So, but taking care of the ball is a huge part of it. And the Seahawks did a really good job with that. And I really praise Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson for that. But, yeah, some of it's luck. But, you know, again, low sack totals, you know, some of the coverage as far as dropping D lineman back. I don't think we saw D lineman get even close to knocking a pass down this year.
No, just the one that accidentally sort of hit Puna Ford.
Yeah. He was running off the field to go get a Gatorade and it hit him in the right back.
Pretty much. All right. The Seahawks defense might be about letting the big dogs eat next year. We'll hear what that means when we sweep the dial coming up with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Scanning the airwaves for the most interesting and entertaining stories of the day. Sweeping the dial. Every afternoon at 4:45 with Wyman and Bob.
Well, Mitch Haniger was a great interview yesterday. And towards the very end, Bob, you asked him about the lockout. And he was very willing to answer that. Now, he is one of the many MLB players who have kind of joined in solidarity. Their Twitter profile pictures are just blank silhouettes. And that was kind of an protest because MLB has removed all mentions of players on any websites during this lockout. So Mitch Haniger came on and said, you know, it's unnecessary that this is going on.
For me, that's the only thing I'm focusing on. I'm focusing on showing up spring, hopefully the same time I always do, and getting ready and prepared to win a World Series, like I said. And I think there was a lot of, you know, buzz around our city and within the game. And it is, you know, pretty unfortunate that the league and the owners implemented the lockout. I feel like this was a little unnecessary, and I feel like this is a fact that they didn't need to do it, and we could have kept on having a normal offseason as far as trades and signs go, and we could have had negotiations going on in the background and hopefully come to an agreement sooner than later. But that's not the route that was taken, and I hope that things get handled, and for the fans' sake, because we all want to play for you guys and have another year of great baseball.
I agree with him, and it sounds like he's obviously dialed into the momentum that was created, not just in Seattle. Obviously, we feel that here with a 90-win team and that final series, a pack building, all of that. But just around the game and the number of big names that are available in this offseason and the speculation, the natural speculation, Dave, that didn't have to be manufactured. It wasn't an ad campaign. It was just people excited about the potential of Carlos Correa landing on their team or Chris Bryant landing on their team or name any of the big name, Corey Seager before, you know, there was just a lot of natural good speculation, you know, sort almost wishing like, oh man, I wonder he'd look great in this uniform playing with this guy next to him on that side of the field. It was natural. It was organic. And it was, it's a shame that it's been completely halted Right. It just runs into a brick wall and just stops.
I wonder what his reasons were to say it was unnecessary.
Well, he was saying they could have kept the negotiations while the season continued. They could have, you know, let free agency continue, everything going on in business as usual, and the powers that be, Players Association and the league, get together and hammer the deal out.
Yeah. Hmm. I wonder. I don't know if they could have gotten that done or not. But, you know, I just compare it to my rookie year. That work stoppage where we missed four games or five games, it was totally unnecessary. Totally unnecessary. All we had to do was wait till the end of the year, get this NFL in court. It was the 5th District Court of Appeals in Minneapolis. Judge David Doty. Everything was all entirely, you know, panned out, and we didn't need to do the whole picketing thing and all that stuff. So yeah, it's got to be frustrating for Mitch, because, you know, and you can see, like he said, that's the part that he is, I think, the most worried about, is that the free agency period is going to be, you know, getting disrupted, and you know, he's fired up for next year.
Sweeping the dial.
Been an interesting couple of days for Cowboys coach Mike McCarthy. After we heard him at the end of the game kind of blame Dak Prescott and defend the play call that ended the game, yesterday in his end-of-season presser, he admits to something that really kind of makes him look bad as a coach.
I thought we were nervous to start the game. Felt it in the locker room at the team prayer, but I thought we fought through that okay. Let me take the word nervous back. I mean, it was a little angst. I mean, they were excited. They had a great week of practice. I thought the pregame was good, but, you know, I just think that maybe it was the first time we were doing this as a whole. They were a little cleaner than we were at the beginning of the game. That's just the facts.
There was some angst going on there.
Well, I think, you know, that doesn't make him sound great. And you were saying earlier, Bob, his explanation of the play made it sound worse.
Yeah, did you read that, by the way?
Yeah,
I can't
I
even repeat it because it was so convoluted. But it just, I'm reading it going, this doesn't add up, the way he was talking about where they were on the field versus where the play ended. And
well, it made sense to me. It made sense to me because, you know, that's a play that you call when everybody's bailing out of there and they're in a sideline defense, right, and you're trying to get a few extra yards. You just have to execute it better. So,
but then he was saying he wishes that Dak slid earlier, but he didn't have a problem with him handing the ball to his center. I'm like, what do you mean you don't have a problem with that? You know better than anybody that the official has to spot the ball. So saying, oh, I don't have a problem with that part of it, it was that he slid too late. I'm like, okay.
Well, I think he's thinking if he slid early, you got time. I mean, the official can get in there and touch the ball.
Yeah.
Everything. But anyway, yeah, that's kind of weird that, you know, he'd say, well, we're a little nervous. I mean, that's on you. I mean, your head coach, he's basically telling on himself. You know, and it, you know, maybe I know Chuck Knox would have said that's on me. You know, I didn't do a good job as far as confidence or angst or whatever. And that's kind of a weird statement. But, you know, I don't know. McCarthy, has he always been kind of like that? Like, maybe that's why Bill Belichick never says anything to anybody, because he's afraid that, you know,
he'll come back to bite him.
Yeah, exactly.
Sweeping the dial.
We've talked about the Seahawks' potential defensive coordinator candidates and thought this was pretty cool. It's interesting. Bears defensive coordinator Sean Desai, one of these guys we've talked about, he was mic'd up during training camp earlier this year, and, well, he'd certainly bring some youthful energy to Seattle and a lot of booms.
Go get it! Boom! Good break! Boom! Pick that off! Pick that off now! Pick that off! Is that pick? That's a pick! Come on! Come on! Get it in here, Calitro! Don't throw that ball back! Boom! Short! Short! Make another short! Pick! Oh! Go get it! Boom! Oh! Go! Come on, man! We gotta let the big dog eat! We gotta let the big dog eat, 9-8!
Hey, he's talking about my guy Austin Calitro. Remember him?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, the linebacker there.
Man, that guy's going to have no voice at the end of the half, much less at the end of the season. Jeez.
Lefko, I was disappointed we didn't hear a bing bong.
That's only from the Knicks. Bong.
Yeah, that's a lot of boom there.
I'll tell you, that's a lot of – that would get Pete fired up. I mean, Pete loves that stuff. And if you're one of those coaches that – you know, is kind of quiet and reserved. Have you ever seen the coaches when they go through those the bags?
Yeah.
Have you ever watched the coaches? I mean, some are jumping around doing jumping jacks, and I mean, that's how they're supposed to be. And so,
what if they brought Desai in and they were doing like you were talking about? They put a play up there on the video screen and have him analyze it. And he starts doing that. Player over here should be over. Boom, right there. He's got to intercept that. Boom, right there.
Pete would love it.
That during the interview. Pete would be like, "You're my guy. Yeah.
You're hired. Hire this man."
Oh, that was a great soundbite. I love that. All right, coming up, the Kraken are trying to turn one win into a win streak. That's right. John Morosi will join us for the latest around the NHL and Major League Baseball. He's coming up next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.